you stop talking, stop thinking that you have to know the solutions, and actually how do you listen a little bit more deeply to what the people who you have potentially hired, and I love your perspective, Ben, also about you have the privilege of working with these people, so lean into them. What do they know that you don't know? And get curious with them around that.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 52 of the show. And the very first episode where I'm joined by not one, but two guests. Today, I'm chatting with leadership expert Debbie Cohen and Kate Roeska-Zummer about their new book, Humanity Works Better, which is due for release on the 26th of October, 2021. So very, very soon. Debbie and Kate are on a mission to help leaders chart a new path forward, one that brings humanity back into the workplace through awareness, choice, and courage. They suggest that the results of this approach will be a healthier, more productive work environment that draws the best rather than squeezes the most out of those that we lead and those that work within our organizations. After decades of working with leaders, they have a shared view that the modern workforce is suffering. They believe organizations and leaders have spent too many years seeking success through a focus on efficiency and productivity, and they believe it's costing us dearly. They also believe workplaces have become toxic and getting work done is a lot harder than it needs to be. Bullying and abuse have reached epidemic levels in some places, along with high rates of burnout, employee turnover, and fatigue. So clearly something needs to change, and their work aims to provide part of the solution at least. I really enjoyed my conversation with Debbie and Kate, and I'm confident that you will too. So without any further delay, please enjoy that very conversation. Debbie, Kate, a very warm welcome to the show. It's fantastic to have you both with me, with us, and it's brilliant to have our first episode where there's three of us on the call talking. So welcome both, and how are you both?
Good. You know, things are good, and it's a beautiful day here in Colorado. Things are good. Yeah. Happy to be here.
I am terrific, and thank you, Ben, for being so gracious with all the technology connections. It's so clear how we're so dependent, and it could really throw you off on your day. So thanks for being gentle with me. Today I'm in San Francisco. It is gorgeous here. Best time of the year to visit San Francisco.
Brilliant. I think we've all got used to technology and technological glitches the past 18, 20 months or so. So no worries at all. So let's, slightly different to how I normally kick off a podcast episode, but let's jump straight into the good stuff if we can. So you've both just written a new book called Humanity Works Better, which I understand is coming out late October and was written because you've both got a sense that the modern workforce is suffering. Is that right? And can you tell us a little bit more about that and about the book indeed?
Yeah. So one of the reasons we wrote this book is because we think that productivity is about people. There's a lot of books out there that say productivity is so important, and they really focus on the process. The process is around productivity. And then there's a lot of people out there that will write the book about the people are important. So we've written this book around productivity is about people. If your people are happy, if they are getting along well with one another, if they are feeling safe and connected, that they will actually produce better results.
We had looked for decades and been inside organizations and just watched people being stretched beyond their limit. Nothing more to give in the tank. And companies went through several cycles of process reengineering. So how do we do the work more efficiently? Then we moved into a period where then it was about how do we get fewer people to do more work? And that's left us with a workforce that is exhausted, depleted, burnt out, emotionally fragile. And then, oh yeah, we put them through a pandemic on top of all of it. And part of what Kate and I just became very, very conscious of in our work inside organizations is people had nothing left to give. And work was hard. And when they were already depleted, being good humans with each other was even harder. And so we just took the stance that productivity is about your people. And this book, Humanity Works, was really written from the pain point of that. People need more. We need more attention at how to help people do the important work that they're doing.
Because there's a feeling that we have that it doesn't have to be as hard as it has been, that people deserve a workplace where they are valued as humans, not as resources. And that means that you need to sort of get more curious about what's going on with the other people around you.
So I'm fascinated that you are really focusing on productivity, because I think in the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic, or maybe even a year in, we started hearing a lot of people talking, a lot of chatter about our productivity's gone up because people are working at home. And we started to see some research, in inverted commas, backing that up. And just this morning, I was reading something that said that research might be perhaps a little bit overstated. So, like, where do you see this interaction between productivity and humanity, right? Because as humans, we are connection making beings. Like we love that. So I think on the one hand, yes, there might be less time commuting and less distractions at home, but all working hunkered in our kitchens or at dining room tables, like that's quite can be quite lonely even for the most introverted people, right? What's your take on that?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about this in anticipation of our conversation today. And one of the things that Deb and I are so passionate about is that it's like we have this superficial belief that who I am at work and who I am outside of work needs to be different. And if I really think about it, I think that that's what COVID is teaching us. I think that that's what we're so passionate about is how do you be the same human inside of work as you are outside of work? How do we get rid of some of those pretenses and some of that superficiality? And I think that that's kind of underneath some of this conversation is how do you be the person that you want to be inside of work, when of course you're ambitious and you're trying to do well and you have to work with other human beings when we're all under, as Deb just stated a few minutes ago, it's like we're all under this added stress and pressure that COVID has actually, and being hunkered down at home in your kitchen tables and your dining room tables. And I think that that's part of the interesting conversation.
One of the things that's coming up for me when you're asking this, Ben, and playing a little bit off of Kate's response, is it feels to me like we're having a great reset. I know they're calling it the resignation, but I think we're having a great reset. I think COVID gave people time to think about what really matters to them. And in the workplace, we had manufactured what matters to you is what's here. This is where your people are. This is where your friends are. This is where you can get a lot of, the word right now is fulfillment that a lot of people are talking about. You know, we can fulfill everything you need inside the four walls of this building. You don't even have to leave to get your laundry, get your food, meet your friends, get coached. It can all happen inside the workplace. And there are some good things about that. And there were some not great things about that. And I think the time away from the workplace is allowing people to reset to what's really important to them. The whole conversation about we need social connectivity, I believe, is true. And what we don't know yet is how much of that need will be fulfilled in our communities, in our homes, with our friends, and what is needed at work to help people feel fulfilled. And I don't think we know that yet. I think we're still a couple years away from actually really knowing what's needed on the social side in the workplace.
That's fascinating. And I guess there's a whole degree of unlearning and relearning that we need to go through to enable that. Because as you was sharing that, kind of all these sparks were pinging off in my brain, in so much as at the minute we're trying to, almost many of us I think are trying to apply the same work pattern at home as we applied in work, in that we get up and we're sitting at our work desk, wherever that may be, from 9 till 5 or 8 till 6, depending on the hours that we're working. And we still feel, many of us, a little bit guilty or about stepping away from the desk to pop out and meet a friend for a coffee. We feel we should be at our desk. But maybe as we start to get to a world where we focus more on outputs rather than kind of activity and time in front of a PC, that might shift, and we might be able to get more of that connection whilst working at home from friends and our community, right?
It's so funny you say that. I was coming back from somewhere this weekend, or no, last Friday, and there was a dad pushing I'm going to call it a toddler, in a carriage, and he has his earbuds in, and he's animated in conversation. And the story I'm making up is he's on a business call while he's walking his child in his or her carriage. And there was a part of me that was like, like, look at him. Like, he's figured it out. I can attend to my child's need for fresh air and take care of this work call all at the same time and feel really good about that. And then there was a part of me that's like, if he wasn't on the work call, would he be having that animated conversation with his child? I don't know the answer to that, but, you know, he was in choice about what was going to serve him and the other needs of his life best, and he was acting on that. And, you know, I think we're still early to know how this is all going to shake out.
What you just shared reminds me of I think it was a movie from the 1980s, right? Three Men and a Baby. Listeners of a certain age will probably remember that. I probably lost some other guests, some other listeners. There you go.
Yeah.
I've heard you both talk about vulnerability a lot as well, which is another sort of passion project of mine in terms of leadership. I think it's something that's being talked about quite a lot in various kind of circles. It's sort of cropping up more and more, I think, in terms of leadership. But I also still think for many leaders, being vulnerable is pretty scary. Can you talk to us about sort of what vulnerability-based leadership means to you both, and what that looks like in practice?
Yeah, and you referenced it in your 50th episode that as leaders, we can't know all of the answers. And I love that you were talking about sort of, you know, really standing in that place of humility and asking for help and input. And I think it is one of those things that certainly on this side of the Atlantic, I think that we have to know all of the answers. And we write about this really extensively in our chapter called Daring Not to Know. And we talk about daring not to know is this practice of surrender. And when you can admit that you don't know everything, that others in the room know things that you do not know, you sort of surrender. And this is when the magic begins, because it actually helps to create connection. It helps to create the sense that I value you over there who might know other things that I don't. And it creates a sense that we're all in this together. But we have this idea in our heads that I'm going to pretend that I know everything, even if I don't. And that is what will keep people at bay. Versus if you can really stand in this place of being vulnerable and willing to admit that you don't know, that actually invites people into the conversation, into the solution. And it sends this message that they're valued and trusted. And I think it really sets the tone for a very different kind of leadership.
In some of our training, in particular around this topic, you can feel the weightiness in leaders when they think they have to know all the answers. The sort of burden that you carry that somehow you're supposed to know everything. And one of our trainings we do is called Influential Leadership. It's with the emerging tier of leaders. It's the greatest myth that they hold is that the leadership tier above them knows all the answers and they're just not giving it to them. And when they realize that's not true, that they need them to ask questions, they need them to share their insights, they need them to partner with them to be good humans and lead the organization forward, it becomes groundbreaking for them and for the leaders above them to realize they are both worthy of and need other people to help them be successful.
And what would you suggest maybe are some of the first steps or first things a leader or indeed anybody, I guess, could do if they do feel like sort of being vulnerable and daring not to know, if that just feels too big and too scary for them? Like, what's the first step to moving through that?
So the first step is really going to be to step into curiosity, right? So we teach it as a skill, the skill of curiosity, which I love because everybody knows how to be curious. It's not a complicated skill. Right. But literally, a first step would be to just get curious with the other people around you, your teammates, your colleagues, whoever, right? What do they think? What do they know about something? So that could be one of those, you don't have to admit that you don't know, but you can start to get curious about what do the people around you see? How do they see this topic or this issue or this problem differently? And standing in that practice of just being curious about how the people around you see that.
And part of that is offering a picture for them of what you're curious about, right? We need to bring in another, you know, $3 million in revenue, and we need to do it through our existing product line. I'm curious what ideas you have about how we could do that.
It's interesting that you used the word a practice of curiosity, which I'm assuming is deliberate, right? Because when you're saying sort of curiosity is a skill that we all have, I think it absolutely is, but it's probably a skill that we can quite easily, especially the more senior we become, easily forget to use because we think we know the answers. Maybe I think I did that person's job 5 years ago and I know what they're going through or the best way to do it. So we can probably quite easily forget to be curious. So practicing it sounds like it's the key.
That's right. It's one of those things that a lot of the skills that we actually offer up in the book, they are not complicated skills, but they are these kinds of skills, exactly what you said, Ben, that actually we sort of forget that we can step into them.
Or we never thought of. Part of the big conversation Kate and I had when we got ready to write the book is, what does it mean to be a good human? And are there certain skills that are just fundamental skills to being a good human? And I think curiosity is one of them. We talk about curiosity as the antidote to judgment. So imagine our world today if we all got more curious about one another and less judgmental. What would be different in the humanity of the world, much less the humanity of our workplace, if we could be curious?
And I'm pretty certain that good humans make good leaders, I think.
I hope. We hope that that's the case.
Yeah, that's right.
Read our book. We'll help you.
Well, on that note, coming back to the book, we've spoken about daring not to know, which I believe is one of the five key practices you talk about in the book. Do you mind sort of running us through the other four briefly? Don't give all the secrets away because clearly you want people to grab a copy of the book and read it for themselves. But top line, what are the other four?
You know, Ben, before we get into the practices and Kate maybe this sort of sets up the model, is at the center of all of our practices are you, the individual. And the belief in our writing is when you begin to change, the people around you will begin to change. This is certainly true in leadership. And so you'll hear as we go through the practices, there is an emphasis on the you and the action for you inside each of these practices.
Yeah, it's really true. And I just want to sort of hop on that for a second. I think one of the things that becomes so, it becomes so easy to just complain about them, whoever them is, right? Your boss or your manager or your colleagues, whatever, they're not doing what we need to do. And it's something that Deb and I are so passionate about, is that the only thing that you can control is you. So if things are not going well in your organization, we want you to focus on what can you do? And that is the perspective through which we have actually written this book. What are some things that you can do, whoever you are, however senior or junior you are in this organization, what are some of the things that you can do in order to affect change in the world around you?
So the first practice that we talk about is creating safety. So little attention gets put to how people are feeling in the workplace. We spend a lot of time talking about what people are doing, but you can't give or give your best if you don't feel safe. So creating safety, we think, is one of the most important aspects of working with people. A lot is said about psychological safety, and in the practice of creating safety, we say it's up to you. If you're sitting at a table, something isn't right about what's being said, what can you do in that moment to create greater safety for yourself and for the others around you?
The second practice is about working together. When working together, we often see that people are focused on their own needs. What do I need to move this ball further down the field? You can start to see people as obstacles, not as people. And so a big shift in this practice is focusing less on your own needs and getting curious about what's happening for the people around you, what's happening for them, right? And then the secret of working together is really, it's not about you.
The third practice is around claiming your values. And here it's about aligning your behaviors and your actions so that what you do and how you do it have continuity. You can imagine, in particular in leadership, at any stage of your life, how important that is. And so many people are just unconscious of what those values really are. It's why fulfillment is so hard to achieve. And claiming your values means you know what's important to you.
And then the fourth practice is owning your impact. This is something you'll hear from us a lot, is that we are all having an impact all the time, whether you know it or not. We talk about you have an intended impact at times, and you also have an unintended impact. That's when you've said something and it's sort of come out the wrong way, or people have misinterpreted a wrong way. So this practice is all about having you become more aware of how people experience you and what makes you compelling. And so we put the onus is very much on you, for you are responsible for what you create, be it good or be it not so good. How do you stay and sort of clean up that mess?
And Kate talked about the fifth practice of daring not to know, but this is that whole idea that we can't know everything. And in our heads, we might see that as obvious, but it's a practice of surrender. And this idea of what's it like to admit you don't know? And when you have the courage to say that, it opens up the door to participation from others and makes it more authentic, both in how you're showing up and how they can show up. And so there, the focus is on you leading the way. Mm-hmm. Five practices.
And are all the five practices created equal, or are there any from your experience and research and the journey of writing the book that seem more significant or more important?
I think that's a great question, Ben. You know, Kate and I, when we first were playing with the model, it was like, huh, is there a starting point? Do you have to start at creating safety and work your way through to dare not to know? And what we're finding in some of our leadership programs is we actually step into the model at the point of greatest need and at the point of most readiness. And I think different people at different stages of their evolution will step into the model at different places.
So in our resilient manager model, we start with creating safety and we work all the way through to daring not, and then we actually just work through to claiming value. But in our more senior programs, and we've got two for the influential leader and executive pause, which is for the C-suite, we actually come into it at claiming value. And then we actually proceed to owning your impact, daring not to know, and then revisit creating safety and working together.
In part, that's because they are already having significant impact in their organization and heightening their awareness early on about who they want to be and how that's showing up is where we begin with the more senior level leadership.
I absolutely love the approach kind of that you've taken with it, and the fact that, as you said, you sits right at the middle. It almost feels as if it's drawing on the sort of philosophy of the Stoics, just focus what's in your control. I'm popularized by Stephen Covey, right? Just focus on what you can do, and through that we start to have an impact and influence on those around us. I just love that approach.
Thanks. We believe it to be true.
Yeah, we really do.
I've heard you also both speak about messiness quite a lot in some of the stuff that I've read. Like, talk to us about messiness.
This is something very near and dear to our hearts. You know, it is one of those things that, you know, working together with other people can get messy. And what we mean by that is that people are so focused on getting done what they need to get done that they're not aware of the impact that they create. They're not aware of what the people around them might need. And inadvertently, they potentially create an environment that feels very unsafe, that's toxic, that makes it very hard to get things done.
At the core of that is being in relationship with others. Giving to others, helping others, being good humans with each other. And that's all about relationships. And we don't care what the relationship is. It could be with a child, a parent, a sibling, a partner, in the workplace. Relationships are hard, right? You don't always get your way. They don't always do what you want them to do. And so how do you navigate the hard parts of a relationship? We call that messiness. And the practices really lead to who do you want to be while you're doing the hard, messy work of being a good human.
Other than those, perhaps the fall out of the five practices, are there any particular traits that you think are key for leaders right now in order to be successful? And I guess for listeners' benefit, really, my definition of sort of being successful as a leader, I think is probably aligned to both of yours from getting to know you, in so much as I really believe that the job of a leader is twofold. One is to deliver the results that we're accountable for, whatever that they might be. It could be a commercial result or not if we're working in the third sector or the charitable sector. But alongside that, I absolutely believe it's also looking after the people, the humans that we've got the privilege and responsibility to lead. So yeah, what else do you think is required for a leader to be successful in the times that we're in?
You know, one of the things that comes up for me is you ask that. It's a great question. In each one of these practices, we connect the practice to a particular skill. So in Daring Not to Know, we talked about curiosity. Creating safety, we talk about listening. And we actually outline three different levels of listening to really hear what people are saying or trying to communicate. We also talk about perspectives, acknowledgement, and shared agreement. So we give our readers some actual skills that are pretty easy to put into practice and start being more human with each other. And a lot of that has to do with how do you stop talking, stop thinking that you have to know the solutions, and actually how do you listen a little bit more deeply to what the people who you have potentially hired. And I love your perspective, Ben, also about you have the privilege of working with these people. So lean into them. What do they know that you don't know? And get curious with them around that.
I love that, Kate. You know, I was watching a news broadcast last night. We just had the 20th anniversary of 9/11 here in the States. And it was a broadcast about the firefighters in New York. And the man who was responsible for all of the firefighters that day, people were talking about him. The newscaster asked if this was someone who you feared, and so you did what he said, or if you did because you wanted his approval. And the person who answered the question said, this is going to make me cry, said, we did it because we love him. And I think that's what this book is about. You know, this is a book about how do you, and I think leaders, all of us need this right now, how do you lead from your heart? How do you lead with awareness about who you want to be? They talked about how this captain stood on the ground that day and he knew what he was asking of his people. And he would ask no more of himself. He was aware of it. He made conscious choices for himself and for others that he believed was in the not only the best interest of why they were there, but in the best interest of the greater good. And he had the courage not only to ask them to act, but to act in alignment with that himself. And that's what came up for me, Ben, when you asked that question. You know, to want to be followed because they love you, and to do it in a way that is so conscious and purposeful and intentional.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And that's a leader that we could all do well to aspire to emulate, right, in our own way, because that is truly human, truly powerful leadership, I think. Hey, Debbie, couple of slightly more quick fire questions to finish up if we can. First one for you both, other than yours, obviously, can I ask you both, what is the one book that really has had a big impact upon you?
So for me, it was probably the book called Living Your Best Life by a woman by the name of Laura Berman Fortgang. And I had a very successful but somewhat tiresome career in the advertising industry. And I was really looking to try to see what was next and had no idea where to begin. And her book is called Living Your Best Life. And it was really my first foray into this whole idea of coaching and starting to understand what does the contribution that I really want to make start to look like. And so I don't even know if this book is still in print, but I definitely read it back in 2001, right after 9/11, because I think like so many people, that had me start to question, what was I doing with my life? And was I making the contribution that I really wanted to make?
Mm-hmm. And Debbie?
Yeah, for me, the author is Max Dupree. And he wrote a series of books, but his first two really, I used to give them out to first-time managers all the time. One is called The Art of Leadership. And his follow-on book was called Leadership Jazz. What I remember about Leadership Jazz, for those of you who are jazz lovers, is in a jazz set, there is a moment where each person is featured. And that's really what he talked about in his book, is how as a great leader, you need to find those moments to let each of your people shine and give them their moment in the spotlight. And I just love that. I felt like he rounded out some early rough edges for me in my leadership journey in both of those books.
Yeah, very cool. And final question, what's your major hope for the world of work in a post-pandemic world?
I mean, one of our very strong beliefs is that we really want to bring more humanity into the workplace. And that means you get to be who you are at work. And who you are at home is one and the same, that you actually can be more human, more open to the people around you. And that means emotionally open and curious and all of that kind of stuff. So that's one of the things that I sort of really hope happens for people.
Yeah, boy, I'm going to go back to my reset word. You know, I hope that this period of time has made people more self-aware about what's important, helping them find voice for what choices will serve them and their neighbors, their family, their workplace best, and stand in conscious choice about the decisions they're acting so that who they're being and what they're contributing are in greater alignment. That would, we could retire at that point, Kate.
Yeah, that's right.
Boy, that would be awesome. Let's go, people.
So just before you do both retire, how can we get hold of the book and how can people connect with you both if they want to do so or if they want to know more?
That's great. We are both on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. But our website is www.humanityworks.com. If you pre-order the book, there's lots of fun little giveaways depending on how many books you decide you want to pre-buy. So probably our website, and then you can find podcasts and articles and newsletters and all of that good stuff on our website as well.
Yep, the book's available in all the big retailers right now and indies as well. We've had a great partner in our publishing and distribution team. And as Kate said, available on our website. We're in pre-sale now and launch is October 26th.
Amazing. Debbie, Kate, thank you so much for giving up your time. Really enjoyed chatting with you both. It's been great fun. There's loads of insights from our conversation for me, and I'm sure everybody listening is going to take great value from it. So thank you very much for your time and all the best with the book launch.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ben. Yeah, we really appreciate your support. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode, folks. But more importantly, as always, I really hope you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result of what you just heard. And before you go, a few quick reminders for you. Please do take just 2 minutes to complete that podcast listener survey via the link in the show notes in order to be in with a chance of winning one of those free sets of the most recommended books by guests on the show. And if you are getting value from the show, please do take a couple of minutes as well to rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it really does help us to continue growing the podcast and bringing you more and more great interviews with leaders and subject matter experts. And finally, if you've still got time after all of that, please do stop by my website, www.ben-morton.com, to learn more about my work and how I may be able to support you now or in the future. That's it for this episode. I will see you again very soon. Take care and lead on.